Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. And yes, the question is there any leadership at New Zealand Rugby at the moment? Because boy, oh boy, it's all a bit of a mess. Coming out of head office, let's be honest with you. Now, thankfully, it wasn't a mess on the pitch, though, was it, Mr. Harris? It was a good return to form by the All Blacks.
It was, Paul, and good evening to everybody. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM, and it's good to know that we've got some leadership happening right here at NZ Sport Radio, because Paul was actually able to organise a guest this evening. So here I am, people. And I'll quickly answer his question. Yes and no. Yes, great performance on the field. No leadership. Gee, needs a bit of work on, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. For me, look, folks, I'll be honest, I've not seen any NPC or Farrah Palmer Cup action at the weekend. My rugby, my daughter's for the weekend, but I did get up at 3 a.m. in the morning to watch the Springboks versus the All Blacks. And then I watched the Pumas versus the Wallabies on delayed viewing the following day. But Stephen, I see that you had a much more rugby weekend and took a little road trip up to Whangarei for a Farrah Palmer Cup and an NPC game.
Yes, I did. You know, delightful day up in Whangarei. Unfortunately, the weather forecast lied to us a little bit. It was supposed to be sunny for most of the day, but during the afternoon, the weather set. And fortunately, later in the day, during the Bunnings NPC clash between the home side, the Taniwha and Waikato, but they also got up and saw the curtain raiser between the Kauri and the Hibiscus Coast Pool. So it was indeed a fun-filled, action-packed weekend of rugby, and it started on Friday night with the Ranfurly Shield game, and of course ended Sunday evening. So I had a very big watching weekend of code.
Well, it started on Wednesday night, but we'll get to that in a moment or two. Good evening to everyone in the live chat. Don't forget, folks, you can join us at 8 p.m. every Monday evening to talk about rugby, and obviously we're back on a Wednesday night with the standoff show for your league action at 8 p.m. Simon saying congratulations to Japan women and Uruguay men for winning the World Rugby Sevens Challenge Series. Well, yes, absolutely. Boy, oh boy. Simon does catch more rugby than even we do. Great that he keeps up to speed on those sort of things, on that side of things. Nocturnal Rights, big result of the weekend with Otago over Tasman. Yes, you are quite right. We do have interesting results and surprise results in provincial rugby to have a chat about as well. And oh yes, as Simon points out, some news we've kind of haven't touched on is a whole bunch of Italian players who have come out and said, oh, we weren't eligible to play for Italy back in the day. So yes, there was a bunch of players who so after Spain's been disqualified from the last two Rugby World Cups for fielding ineligible players It's come to light that Italy, and we are talking about, I think it's about a decade ago now, a number of players who were pointing out that, wasn't entirely truthful about some about my about being allowed to represent Italy in that kind of thing. So, and I guess, Stephen, this is one of the problems we have with sports administrations is, look, these organisations appear big at points and small at others. And at the end of the day, they act a bit like police, don't they? In that if you report a crime, they'll look into it, but they won't go and try and find crime or any wrongdoing specifically.
The devil is in the detail when you're basically, when it comes down to administration, Paul, and ticking all the right boxes. Of course, we've heard a few famous ones over the years. I think Shane Howth, I can think back to playing for Wales with a Welsh grandfather or grandmother, I think it was at the time. So, yeah, listen, I think all the cards really have to be on the table in these circumstances.
Yeah, and there was a Welsh player who, a Kiwi who played for Wales, who misclaimed around his where his grandfather was born, but then became eligible through residency, and someone with his name actually played for Waikato last weekend, but I couldn't find out if they were actually relatives or not. On that one. So sorry that the person who reached out to me on Twitter to ask me if I could find out, we couldn't find that out for you on that one. But anyway, let's crack in and catch up on the NPC action then. So Wednesday night, Manawa 2 lost 18-45 to Auckland. Boy oh boy, Manawa 2 have had a shocking start to the season. Not helped by the fact that they've had to play Canterbury, then Auckland, and then North Harbour in a storm week. Their North Harbour result, jumping to the last game of the round, they lost 64-14. That means that Manawa 2 have lost all three games now, and they've lost them all three games on an average of more than 40 points. So, Stephen, one of the reasons that they didn't stick with North-South for the Farrer Palmer Cup was that the whole league wasn't strong enough, and then they go and put the NPC Premiership and Championship together. Is there an argument here that some of the ex-Championship sides aren't strong enough?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I probably tweeted out, I got off the mark very early, of course, Manawa 2 getting tailed up in round one by Canterbury, and I thought to myself, here we go again. But there is a distinct pattern after the Turbos have played three games. The reality is, I think they probably are going to be maybe down near the foot of the table. I think they were paying originally $180 at the TAB, and Southland and Northland were the two ranking outsiders at $150. I think that's probably reversed in the space of a week, Paul. And what it also highlights that they probably just don't have the depth. We all know that their club competition, they don't have a lot of clubs at the moment, and any half-decent kids that they do get are normally picked up by the Wellingtons of this world. Ruben Love, for example, who's running around at first five fullback for the Lions in the Bunnings NPC, and they do lose a lot of quality. And unfortunately, when there's not a lot of money in the bank, you've got to go local. And if you look at that Turbo squad, that's exactly what they've done. So it could be a very long year. They also suffer, Paul, because I don't think they've got a type five that's quite capable of matching a lot of the bigger teams, and that's an area where they're struggling. They are very good, well served in the loose forwards. JT Howden and also Braden Yosea are very, very good players, but listen, they're only really a handful of very good players. And of course, they lost their halfback from two or three seasons, Jamie Booth, who ironically turned out against them in yesterday's final round game, Paul.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Massey not providing enough players. Look, they have got a university there, which actually gives them more ability to have young players than, say, a Tasman or a Northland, where your 20 year old your sort of late teens, early 20s head away from town to go to uni. So from that point of view, they're actually in one of the sort of better situations you'd think than some of the other provinces. And but then again, Stephen, you say, look, they haven't got money, so they have to recruit players locally. Now, historically, we would call this rep rugby. Why do we call it rep rugby? Because it's representative rugby. It's supposed to represent your province. That's the whole point of this. That's what this is supposed to be, is rep rugby. It's not supposed to be cash book club European style rugby. So so you'd hope that all that these teams would have locally based players. Now, the player teams like Auckland, Waikato, Wellington, Canterbury, and Otago, where you've got a Super Rugby side, and obviously players who, if you're playing Super Rugby, it makes sense for you to play to the local, because otherwise, if you're playing for Tamanivalu was, he was playing for the Crusaders, but also playing for Taranaki. Now, that meant 6 months of the year or 7 months of the year, he'd be living in Christchurch, and then for the other 4 or 5 months, he'd be living in New Plymouth. New Plymouth. How does your partner get a job if you're spending half the year, if you're basically spending yourself between two places? House prices are high enough. How do you afford two houses? Or you're having to rent and all these sort of things. So, the Super Rugby places have more opportunity than the to hire local people. But it's a struggle putting Manawatu in the same bracket as the other ones there on that one. But also, Stephen, there was an article that I don't know if it was you that put it into our chat group about how the NPC is more important outside of the big centres and is far from dead in your places like Manawatu, Southland, etc., where people really enjoy it. So, look, it's not getting the service it requires, isn't the NPC, and I don't think the new format personally helps matters.
Yeah, I was going to say the reviewer who's just has just put up a post sees the table actually looks quite competitive, and it is only at the stage Manawatu and Taranaki who are struggling. Listen, that's Manawatu's issues are offset with, if you look at a team like Southland, predominantly club players. If you look at probably their name players in that Southland side, probably Marty Banks, Scott Gregory, Beckuis, the lock who's come back to Southland. You have a look at the rest of that squad, and it's predominantly out of their club competition. So it just goes to show. Also, head coach Dale McLeod doing a great job with Southland. You also look at Counties Manukau. They've decided to go very local this year, push a lot of local players through, and that they are showing that they're more than competitive. And no doubt we'll talk about how well they actually did in their Shield Challenge as well. Paul, maybe a bit of a segue there. Paul needs to unmute himself. Yes, you, sir.
Sorry, I muted myself to pour my beer, so you all didn't have to listen to me. So you all could listen to the wonderful words of Stephen and not be distracted by me cracking the can open.
But I'll tell you what, we're just a little bit out of kilter. You know, we haven't played together for about 3 weeks, so we're just probably missing that synergy that we have in the midfield at the moment. So that will eventually come. We'll get that with a little bit more transparency.
Yes, it says the flanker used to play to the hooker. I'm sure. We're a great midfield partnership. Anyway, as you say, let's move on rather than me ranting about New Zealand rugby ruining the best rugby competition in the country. Hawke's Bay against Counties Manukau, 33-32. As I said, I didn't watch this. I had my daughters here. But look, looking at the scores and tracking it, Hawke's Bay had this one in the bag. And then Counties came back. And boy, oh boy, I think I caught the end of it. And they came down to sort of a little indiscipline at the very end that meant the Counties didn't go home with the Shield. So cracking game from that point of view on Friday night, 33-32. On that note, they should have opened up perhaps the season opener should perhaps always be a Renfrewshire Shield Challenge, and that would get interest as well, rather than that Canterbury beating Manawatu. But anyway, that's me going back to ranting about New Zealand rugby rather than about the game, Stephen.
Yeah. Oh, pretty much straight up, Paul. Like, you know, the interesting thing about this particular game, it was probably the game was won and lost on Counties Manukau ill discipline in the first half, just giving away a lot of penalties, and with on the back of those penalties, giving the Magpies a lot of ball. And we know that they're a team with a lot of strike power, good offloading game, which basically kills a lot of team. And at 28-6, even I might have posted somewhere game over. Well, little did I know, I didn't take into account the fortitude of Counties Manukau. All of a sudden they started holding onto some ball. They did get hurt for a little while between the 50th and 60th minute when they lost a number 8 Tuifua to a yellow card. So that was a little unfortunate that they lost him. But, boy, they hung in there. And, you know, with the likes of Roy Gard at halfback, who's made a really good start to the season, just kept varying their play. And they came right back into the team. And with 10 minutes to go, scored a couple of tries. But one of the outstanding tries was from Nanai Satoru. We all know what sort of talent this guy's got, Paul. You've seen a lot of him running around for the Chiefs. But on the wing, all of a sudden, we've seen him in his rightful position of fullback. And he looks absolutely comfortable there. So I think there's a lesson to a lot of the coaches. Don't play this guy out of position. Play him at fullback. Listen, if you're the Chiefs coaches, Clayton McMillan, play him at fullback. Because I would suggest there was an opportunity for Counties to take this game right at the end, but one of the replacement players dropped the pill, and that was pretty much the end of the game. They'll definitely be kicking themselves on this one because the opportunity was there. But great comeback from Counties Manukau.
Yeah, look, unfortunately, there's a lot of very, very good fullbacks running around at the moment. Look, Will Jordan can't even get the 15 jersey for the All Blacks. Anyway. David Havili can't play fullback anymore either, because he's been pushed out of it because there's so many good fullbacks around. But anyway, so congratulations for Kenny's coming back, but well done Hawke's Bay holding on. Next up, shock of the round, Otago beating Tasman 25-19. Tasman, look, they have been finalists and champions perennially for the past few years. So really impressive result there from Otago, who were a championship side last season up against that team. Big surprise there with that one. And then the game that you were at, Stephen, Northland versus Waikato, 10-16. Now, look, this is one that our Stato Boa had pulled up as potentially being a bit of an upset for Northland. He thought they would be able to get it. Waikato, look, champions last year. So I would have thought they would come out with a bigger win than this. So who was really the best, the right here? Me, that Northland have overperformed because they kept it close, or him, that they underperformed when they could have actually won this one?
Oh, listen, Paul, they started well, which is, in most games of rugby, what you need to do is get off to that good start. They scored early, and at 10-6 up at halftime, and with the elements behind them, a little bit of a southwesterly, and knowing that there was some wet weather coming in, they had an opportunity to pin Waikato down. But really, at the end of the day, this came down to the Waikato set piece, line out set piece, and line out and scrum just being that little bit better. And also the class of Damien McKenzie as well. There were times in the first half when Northland actually got on the outside of Waikato and they'd put a kick ahead, and before you know it, Damien McKenzie was just in the right place at the right time. Northland defended rather well in this game. Lucky to pick up a bonus point, but I think their defence actually kept them in the game. And at the end of the day, that final score probably flattered Northland. And whilst they probably missed a trick, they're actually quite fortunate that they only finished 6 points behind. It's never easy for Waikato. Had Waikato lost that game, it would have been the first time since 1973 that they'd lost three games in a row to, back then it would have been North Auckland. Paul, Northland have always had success over Waikato. And listen, it wasn't an easy night at the office for the visitors, but they'll be happy enough with the win, especially after sharing the honours in their first game against Hawke's Bay. But a much improved start for the Taniwha. I thought they were hit rather late in the piece. They lost Ofa Tuanga Fassi in the leading hours up to the game with a heavy cold. But from what I understand, they both Jack Goodhue and Ofa Tuanga Fassi are going to be available to play minutes for Northland this weekend against Wellington.
Which would be fantastic for them. And you got a couple of interviews after that game, didn't you, as well? So tell people about those interviews and that they can go and get them over on our New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook page. What were the post-match interviews you got there?
Oh, okay. Listen, I've picked up a few, obviously, with Mitch Jacobson, skipper of Waikato. Lovely fella as well. Really, really, really nice. Also caught up with Josh Morby, who's obviously transferred to Northland this year after being down in Southland and, of course, having a bit of a stellar season with the Hurricanes. Crystal Murray, the captain of the... I was going to give you all the interviews, but yeah, those are pretty much the two main interviews I got. I also had a chat with Jack Goodhue as well, which I haven't posted at this stage, so it was good to see Jack back playing. Interestingly enough, that right knee still strapped, Paul, so obviously not 100% at this stage. He obviously wouldn't tell me anyway, but... Yeah, really, 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 really interesting. And it's good to see our All Blacks in that game. But more importantly, good sized crowd at Siminoff Stadium to support the Taniwha.
Yeah, they're doing some good things up there with working with the community and also obviously with the Women's Rugby World Cup heading up there soon as well. So there's lots of excitement about rugby up in Northland currently. Finally, the final game on Saturday saw Canterbury beat Wellington 43-10. Wow, look. This Wellington team with some good names in it, but Canterbury really have laid down an early marker with this one as basically one of the teams to beat. So great start for Canterbury there. Moving into Sunday, first game up, Bay of Plenty 46, Taranaki 6. Ouch. Did not really expect this kind of result. Taranaki last year were unbeaten as they went to the championships title. Bay of Plenty last year, let's be honest, brought in some ex-Super Rugby coaches. It didn't work. Those coaches have moved on very quickly. And Mike Delaney now is basically his first stint as a head coach at this kind of level. And it's working for Bay of Plenty there with that win over Taranaki. A bit of a surprise result, I guess, with the new coaching setup of Bay of Plenty. And a successful coaching setup of Taranaki struggling this year.
Oh, Bay of Plenty. That was some performance. I was sort of in and out between two games and Southland game running at the same time. But we had an unexpected pause in that particular game, which we'll get to shortly. So I was able to quickly flick across back to the other side and check out Bay of Plenty, Taranaki. Yeah, Taranaki struggling this year. Listen, on the surface of it, they've still got a reasonable pack happening, and they've got the same halves from last year, but just missing that X factor that they had last year. Of course, Naholo, Ratumavaki, Nipkins didn't play this weekend, but just doesn't seem to be gelling. I think they might have had their confidence knocked after losing round one. Simon Hughes reckons they're missing the championship.
they won all their crossover games, which didn't happen. And then, look, the win last weekend was the Northland, who were a championship team last year. So, look, I don't think you can really really blame that as being the problem, to be honest.
No, probably not. I think it might be just a confidence thing. They got on a run last year and got that tempo going, but you know, you look through most of that squad again, but you know, once again, they've got a few people missing as well. You know, remember they had Josh Lord there last year running around for them before he actually got injured, if I recall. So might be just a depth thing. On the other side of the coin, Paul, Taranaki, beg your pardon, Bay of Plenty. Wow, they are just running absolutely hot. Really impressed with their centre, Walton, who's out of the club competition. Looks a really, really good player, but it's their pack that's doing it at the minute for it, the likes of Sangster, Selby, Rickett. That's a hell of a middle row, and Zane Capelli is a human cannonball at number eight for them at the moment. And, you know, you've got a back three of Narawa, R. Wong, and, of course, the returning Gillies Kaka, former New Zealand Sevens player. Wow. there's some talent there. But as we very well know, they invested in a lot of talent last year, and that's coming to fruition.
Yeah, they were a cracking team. It was coaching was the issue, not the roster last year. Then, Southland 23, Auckland 24. Boy, oh boy. As you say, Southland, at the top of the show, you've mentioned how they were TAB outsiders, expected to basically get thrashed each or not get near a win all season. To get within a point of Auckland with the squad they have on paper, that's a cracking result for Southland, isn't it?
Oh, listen, and I know even from their first round against Tasman, talking to messaging Dale McLeod, they're just frustrated. They didn't get across the line in that game. And once again, in this particular game, I actually thought there was an opportunity. 7 minutes to go. You're down 24-16. You have a kickable penalty. You've got to score twice. You need to take that shot at goal, and a converted try wins you the game. Marty Banks to tap it. Take the quick tip, they lose perception of the ball, and the opportunity is lost, and they score, credit to them, they score right at the end, and the try is converted, and it leaves them 1 point short. As you say, Paul, if those 3 points are on offer, you're still in the game. You take those 3 points, but for a side, you look through all these names, and there's not a lot of names that we know, but by the end of the season, all of a sudden, these names will be up on lights. Yep. And Super Rugby teams will be looking around. Wallace, the halfback, I'll just highlight the player. He looks got a little bit of Aaron Smith about him. Looks a really, really good player, and maybe one to watch. Finn out on the wing with the headgear, very strong. And like I say, not too many named players. Solomon, good to see Solomon Alemalo after taking time out, actually coming back to this level of football. And Scott Gregory at second five. Wow. Looks like a renewed player playing in his rightful position at second five under Dale McLeod. Am I making a bit of a point there?
absolutely. We've already talked about the Harbour game versus Manawatu there with that one. So, as you say, looking at the tables in the Odds Conference, I mean, oh, geez, what a catchy name that is, Odds Conference. Yeah. I mean, that's going to get people really into it, isn't it? Hawke's Bay lead the way on 8 points ahead of Bay of Plenty and Waikato. Nobody has managed to win both their games there. That's with a draw, winning the draw for Hawke's Bay and Waikato. Southland there at the bottom there with two losing bonus points, as we've kind of talked about. On the evens conference, Auckland lead the way with three wins, having played their Storm week with 14 points ahead of Canterbury, who are on 15 points with two wins, and Manawatu at the bottom there, three losses, but Taranaki also had two losses. So, obviously, Auckland and Canterbury looking in the, I mean, you've got also Tasman in that conference. You're like, wow, that's a stacked conference. You've got to say, oh, you want to be in that odds conference there, I think, personally, with, let's say, Hawke's Bay, Bay of Plenty, and Waikato looking good the moment on that one.
Paul, just before we move on from the NPC, just a few things that I just quickly want to highlight from this weekend's NPC. And I see Nocturnal just popped it up before. Jacob Morrison, son of former New Zealand cricketer Danny Morrison, coming off the bench and scoring a try for Southland right at the end there. So that's got me curious in terms of course, Danny Morrison, a North Shore boy, but sort of born and bred, but of son Jacob Morrison playing down in the playing for the Southland Stags. That's the first thing. Second thing is, and once again, Nocturnal Rides can come to the party again. Interestingly enough, Cam Miller starting at first five for Otago on the weekend, and he looks like he pretty much played most of the minutes. Josh Ioane stuck on the bench the weekend. That was really, really interesting to me in the Tasman Otago game. And just finally, for all those unions out there, if you've got a toaster in your kitchen, just make sure that toaster is up to date, because that's the sort of thing that can basically shut a game of rugby down if the toaster's got any wiring issues.
And you have the fire alarm goes off. Dearie me. Yeah. I don't know, people suggesting, oh, it could be a bomb scare. Folks,
yeah, who said that?
Chill out. We live in New Zealand. Relax, okay, folks. Where this is not so. Yeah. Oh dear. Bottom skit. Anyway,
believe me.
Wouldn't an overall table make more sense if they're going to all go for the same trophy? Boy. You know, look, reviewer, stop trying to talk common sense here. This, look, we're talking about rugby administrators here who are looking at how can we make this the most complicated and confusing competition we can? Because you know what? That works so well with Super Rugby. But we might as well copy something like that and find a convoluted conference system that no one understands. So why not have it? Yes, exactly. Have a table that is 14 teams and then just take the top eight into quarterfinals. No, we've got to have different conferences so that everyone's played at everyone else in their own conference at least once, blah, 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 to get into conferences, to get into quarterfinals. Look, it's just basically, how do we try and fit a 14-team competition into 10 weeks? As Simon says, why don't we give them a couple more weeks and actually have maybe have a 14-week round robin and play each every other team once and then have semi-finals and quarter-finals, or semi-finals and final. But no, that's not what they're going to have. They say they've only got this window to fit it into. It's still a 12-week competition with 9 weeks plus 3 weeks of finals. Last year was 10 weeks plus 2 weeks of finals. They've decided that's the window that they have, and they won't give provincial rugby any more of a window than that. End of story, because Super Rugby teams want to have their pre-season start before Christmas, essentially. But there you go. That's me, another rant about New Zealand Rugby not giving the NPC the deserved attention and coverage window, etc. That's the best competition in men's rugby in New Zealand deserves. But anyway, there we go. Should we get past ranting then?
I was about to say we should end it. It is the heart and soul of New Zealand rugby. Now we can end it.
Now, folks, I'll take over the full screen for this sort of thing as we do a bit of a section, as I take a bit of a break into something that's not rugby. I'm ranting a couple of times tonight. That's possibly partially because I've perhaps not been in the best place that I could have been for the past couple of weeks. And all of that's down to my own fault and not getting stuff sorted out and not recognising my own triggers. Look, if you do have mental health issues or suffer with depression, then please, folks, try and understand your triggers and try and work around those as best you can. And do also reach out and talk to people. One of the things that, again, I talk about and don't necessarily and don't always do. Sometimes I find it easier talking to a camera than I do talking to people, for example. I've had a few issues these last couple of weeks. Part of it's around doing the exam that I'm trying to do to become a bar manager, which is a stupid thing to get stressed about and trigger you. But hey, we have our own triggers. We have our own things that kick us off. And that's one of mine, is basically doing forms and admin. Not very good when governments like you to fill in forms and admin. And I should become a New Zealand resident. I've been here for plenty of, a New Zealand citizen. I've been here for plenty of years, but that involves filling in a form, which I just raises my hackles and I just find hard to do. Don't worry, I'm not here illegally. I do have residency, but I should get some citizenship. But so yeah, I was sat in my car today and I didn't want to leave my car to come into my own home because I live by myself. It's not like there's anyone in here who's going to upset me, because I just didn't want to have to approach the computer screen and see if there was an exam I hadn't done. So folks, please recognize your triggers, try and minimize those and do talk and reach out to people as best you can. As I say, not at my best at the moment. Once I get that exam out of the way, that test out of the way, I'll be actually in a much better place than all that. But anyway, there we go. That's just my little bit about mental health. And I'll bring Stephen back in so we can talk about Farah Palmer Cup.
I just want to support what you're saying. Very, very well said. If there's anybody up there who does watch a show, make sure you actually reach out to somebody. Talking with somebody is a really good thing. And you'd basically be surprised, you know, how you can actually snap out of a situation like that. I won't go on because I'm not an expert on mental health. But what I do recognize is anybody with a mental problem, basically reach out. reach out to somebody who will basically help you through this. So good luck with that, Paul, and good luck to anybody else out there. But, you know, back onto something that we love is this particular program, and we're going to talk, is it Farrah Palmer Cup?
Yep, so Farrah Palmer Cup up next. Now, this one is split into a championship and, Premiership. There we go. Looking at the results, and my results aren't split that way, unfortunately, so I've got to try and remember which one is a championship team and which one is a premiership team. But Otago Spirit, over Tasman, 39-7. I've talked before about how Tasman know that they're a young development level team because they don't have a university. They know they're going to lose all of their players.
Yeah.
So unsurprising there, whereas Otago with the university are in a much stronger position. Otago now with 4 wins out of 4 with 4 try bonus points, really looking strong in that zone championship. The team to beat as far as promotion goes. So no shade on Tasman for that one. Hawke's Bay, 45 over Taranaki, 15. Again, Taranaki, newish, struggling team. 4 losses so far. So Hawke's Bay keeping that pressure on Otago in that one. And then Northland, 27 to beat North Harbour, 23. Now, Northland, a couple of years ago, when we went north-south because of COVID, really did challenge and were looking at being in that. I think they made the semi-finals that year when it was sort of a mix of both teams. But since it's gone back to Premiership Championship, haven't managed to really put in those performances. When it was a mixed up and they were playing against Premiership teams, you're like, boy, this team deserves to be in the Premiership. But they don't seem to be able to put those results together to get that promotion, Stephen.
Yeah, you're correct, Paul. They're probably missing, if you think back to those times, they had the likes of Portia Woodman, Victoria Sabritsky, Nafatali, also Tyler Nathan Wong. You know, they had players of that calibre and experience. But at the moment, they've had to replace some of those players with a lot of young experience as well. And as per a couple of interviews that I did with two of Northland's rising stars, Tara Turner, and also I've just for the life of me forgotten the name of their girl, the other player, Kerry Johnson, who is actually the niece of former All Black Freddie Woodman. So the grandchild of former All Black Freddie Woodman. So they've got a lot of young talent that's in this side that are finding their way. I think with Northland at the moment, they are probably in two minds in terms of which game plan that they want to play. You know, they've got some really good ball running forwards, and it's just really finding that balance between what they know best and what they know what they've got out wide. I know a lot of the feedback I'm pretty much hearing that really what they're looking to do is trying to grind sides down, but at times they're getting away from their game plan, getting a little bit loose, turning ball over, and that's when they've been able to bring sides like North Harbour back into the game. Of course, they were up 22-13, I think it was, at halftime, comfortable, probably the breeze behind them. Harbour fought back, and as the previous week before against Tasman, when they had a big lead, once again, they got ran down at the end, and that's simply by straying from the game plan. But you can't blame them, Paul, because they've got some weapons out in the wide channels, but admittedly very, very young. I think Tara Turner is only about 17 and Kerry Johnson about 18. So we're talking real youngsters here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, the other week when I was watching up at Counties, I think it was, they got a 16-year-old running around out there for Wellington, was it? I think it was they were playing us from memory. Anyway, so look, you've got those. And then your next interview over on the New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page is with Crystal Murray, who is a Super Rugby player, and also Blackfern. So you've got 17-year-olds running, playing, well, with in this case, but also against Blackferns. And we talk about player welfare and how All Blacks wouldn't be safe to play against club players. You went, wow, okay. So that interview is also up there on that Facebook page. But yeah, it's an interesting mix, isn't it, Stephen?
It is, Paul. You know, the crazy thing about it, this would never happen at NPC level. You know, it would never happen, not in a month of Sunday. You know, you might find the odd 18 or 19-year-old will be part of a wider training squad or a PDF or player development type player, but might get limited minutes, if any at all. But to see players of this young age, and of course the two experienced heads in the Northland team, Crystal Murray and Charmaine Smith, who's running around for the Kauri this year, beg your pardon, you know, obviously, you know, just finding the right game plan which suits their team. But all of a sudden you've got these young kids that are so enthusiastic out in the Vex. It must be interesting times, but it's handy to have that sort of leadership within the squad.
Absolutely. Moving on then to the Premiership games of the weekend. Manawatu, who was struggling obviously in the NPC, but in the Farapama Cup, beat Wellington 38-17. A good win for them there. Canterbury over Waikato, repeat of the final from last year, 29-27. Cracking game by the looks of their side. So I didn't get the, it wasn't that one. So 2-point win there for Canterbury over the reigning champions, Waikato. And then on Sunday, Bay of Plenty up against Counties Manukau. Counties Manukau won that one 12-25. Meaning that looking at the Premiership now then, we've got Canterbury at the top there, four wins with four bonus points on 20 points, ahead of Waikato with three wins and their first loss there on 14. Auckland Storm, Counties Manukau, Bay of Plenty have all got two wins in that tight mid-table there, with Wellington Pride at the bottom on 6 points, us and Manawatu Cyclones on seven, just above them. But both those teams just with the one win at the bottom there. So you've got to say, real tight midfield, real tight mid-table, sorry. I'm talking about football there, about midfield. Mm-hmm. A real tight mid-table there with Auckland, Counties, Bay of Plenty, with the two finalists, perhaps, at the top again.
Paul, I took in the highlights of the Canterbury Waikato game, obviously knowing the score at the time. But, you know, at one stage during this game, in the 35th minute of the first half, Canterbury led by 19-6. And you thought, well, maybe it's not going to be Waikato's day. Waikato get a try just before halftime, converted by Rennie Holmes. And then by the 49th minute, they're leading by 20-19 with half hour to go. And then Canterbury jumped back in the lead. And at the 63rd minute, Waikato score, and Rennie Holmes kicks the conversion there ahead 27-24, but it's a late Kendra Coxedge try, which she converted herself, which gave them the win by 29-27. But really a game that just looked an absolute cracker, and that's probably the level that many of these teams need to be aspiring to. You've got to say Canterbury and Waikato have certainly got that down pat.
Yeah, looking forward to next weekend then, folks. I will probably be at Counties Manukau versus Waikato in the Bunnings NPC on Friday night. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff. On Saturday, there is a double header at North Harbour, so I'll probably get in touch with them trying to do that. So North Harbour women playing Otago at 2 o'clock, followed by North Harbour versus Tasman at 4:30 in the NPC. Ashwin, if you're listening, I might be asking for a bed on that Friday night, so I don't have to drive backwards and forwards. I won't do it if I should drive backwards and forwards. I can say Ashwin's, I probably will. Then maybe also catch Auckland versus Bay of Plenty on the Sunday there. I don't know, Stephen, if you're planning on that one or on Sunday, because I know you've got a media pass for them. I've not actually got in touch with Auckland yet, so I'm not sure whether they'll give me one or not, but so those look like the games that we'll try and bring you coverage from this coming weekend. Yep. All of the Farapama Cup games are on Saturday this coming weekend. If I can't stay over at Ashwin's, I'll probably catch Waikato versus Auckland Storm instead, rather than going all the way back up for North Harbour's games. There you go. That's my plan, I think, for the coming weekend.
Yeah, Paul, I'm probably looking at heading off to that Auckland Bay of Plenty game. I think that should be a good game. Both both teams coming off a win, and of course Auckland coming off a stretch, and I wondered how long it was going to take me to start coughing, so I'm just going to mute myself.
Cool, right then. So that's Parks, our domestic rugby, and then we can crack on with the international stuff. So first off, we'll talk about the actual games, and then we'll talk about the afterwards the impact on any coaching things, folks. We'll see if we can. We'll see how long we can keep Stephen before he keels over and dies with his cough. We're going to try and keep him alive for the so he can get to Auckland Bay of Plenty for the weekend. So we kicked off with South Africa versus New Zealand with a much more impressive start by the All Blacks from the previous weekend. A scrum on halfway-ish that was theirs. They gave a penalty and then they never basically got out of their half again. This time, crossfield kick by Havili to Sevilla breaks down there. Willemse kills the ball and we have a yellow card for South Africa in the opening 3 minutes. Now, the All Blacks couldn't convert during that. And we have Peter Seftoftoy make a break down the other end. So both sides basically having opportunities early on. Neither of them really, neither of them being able to finish anything. Thoughts with Jesse Creel as Clark takes out another Springbok after poor tackle technique on a body that size is going to get you in trouble. We saw that with Faf last weekend. We saw that with Jesse Creel this weekend. But the big difference in the opening 20 minutes, we haven't even got a score yet, let's be honest, was the All Blacks weren't losing the aerial contest and they weren't getting turned over at the breakdown. And now with those two things, A, that means that the Springboks weren't getting an attacking platform further up the pitch because they weren't turning over kicks, and B, or rucks. And that meant that the All Blacks.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We're in a position to do some phases and kick with safety rather than losing the ball. I personally don't think there was that much difference between the game plan this weekend and the previous weekend because we saw the All Blacks run the ball from their own 22 this weekend and have some great breaks, not necessarily finishing in tries. But just their execution was better this weekend around that breakdown, around that high ball. Stephen, did you see a big change or do you think it was just better execution of the same game plan?
No, Paul, I've actually got to agree with you. Straight on, straight up, I'd be to say they pretty much nailed all the high kicks that were sent to them. They were a little bit more accurate on the pass. And I just think they're a little bit more accurate at breakdown, contesting on line out, you know, generally in most cases winning their own ball. I suppose the only real concern after 20 minutes, they hadn't posted any tries, but when the points did come, they sort of came in about a nine-minute period. I suppose the only thing they would be a little bit disappointed is the 6 minutes leading up to halftime, leading South Africa back in with 10 points because, going in 5 points at halftime, they probably, somewhere in the back of their head, I would imagine, they would have probably been a tad disappointed. Paul playing a lot of footy, but only in front by 5 points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's they had the better of the possession, but not the territory in that first half. It flips around in the second half, so they had less possession but more territory. And that's without a wind per se. Let's be honest here. Run meters very similar on that one. But you talk about set piece. You say challenging the set piece. Neither side, particularly early on. We're great with set pieces. The Springboks lost to scrum. The All Blacks lost two. The Springboks lost four lineouts. The All Blacks lost two. So, look, I'd say the set piece was misfiring for both games to a degree in this one. Some interesting things here around the South Africa. And I know the commentary, and I've seen some comments on Twitter about the poor work on commentary. And I think it's perhaps one of the worst commentary games we've seen from the New Zealand commentators, saying that the front row is being replaced in its entirety when it wasn't. Only one, a prop and a hooker was being replaced by South Africa. So they got that wrong. Justin Marshall talking a lot about how, oh, look, early changes must mean basically the Springboks forwards have been running around. They're all tired. Now, look, you've got Dwembe coming on. Dwembe, because third choice hooker, because the first choice one is Crook. I think the plan was always for him to run short. If he was going to run and then bring Marks on, rather than to finish off for more than a half of rugby. Same with Vermeulen. We were talking in our live chat pre-week that I didn't think he was going to make, if he was, as he was starting, I didn't think he was going to finish the first half and would get replaced. And it was like, and Bell was like, right, that's enough for him to control the game or dominate the game or make an impact. That's fine. They're just playing with the rules and use them in a different way that people aren't, people aren't used to, saying, oh, well, you've got to bring the guy off in the last, you've got to start with your best player who will play 60 minutes. No, you don't. You can play that 30 minutes in the first half and just flip it around the other way. So I thought that was interesting. I think the tactics of the Springboks have been very interesting and perhaps more innovative than we've seen from most other teams around the world, Stephen.
Oh, absolutely! Looking at the social media, I know a lot of people are talking about the performance of the referee Luke Pearce, that he was a technical referee. Well, he was a technical referee, but if you kind of look back at a lot of the things that he picked up, he was probably right at the end of the day. Like the only one I really questioned was a throw into the line out, which was crooked, won by South Africa. But I suppose at the end of the day, it wasn't clean position at the end of the day, and they only really took it through. They never actually got through one phase, did they? So really, at the end of the day, he probably thought, listen, there's no advantage. So he took it back. There were a couple of other technicalities that he picked up along the way. Listen, even if a maul is going forward, you just can't lift anybody's leg off the ground, even if you're driving it off the ground. And I think that's what he probably picked the All Blacks up for. I know I see one of their posters in there basically said the All Blacks got all their high kicks as they used illegal blocks. Listen, if you stand your ground without moving, then it's not an issue. If you change your lane in front of a runner, then it's an issue. And I think there's at least four officials, with counting the TMA, if none of them pick it up, well, you've probably got away with something.
Look, to me, it's I really don't like this comment of a technical referee. What you actually mean is he's actually blowing the whistle according to the laws of the book. Wow, that's technical referee, quite right. He's not just going, oh, that scrum's going forwards, so I guess I'll give them dominance. Now, it doesn't matter if you're going forwards or backwards. If you're going forwards illegally, then you should be blown for it. Sorry, but I'll be honest. I've seen that a lot. I thought he had a very, very good game, right? Yeah. I mean, is he going to get every single call right? No. He's human, just like we are. Yeah. Now, the non-straight lineout, yes, it was not straight because the All Blacks threw it onto the South African side. Now, okay, yes, you've given them an advantage, but it's straight whether you throw it to your side or to their side. You've got to throw it straight. Yeah. I guess the law says straight. The law doesn't say not towards your position or not towards your side. You can throw it towards the opposition side. No, you're not allowed to do that. You've got to throw it straight. So if you throw it over their shoulder, it's still not straight. I thought it was a good performance by the referee.
Paul, there was another one. I think it might have been Fletcher Newell's first scrum when he was, I think George Bauer was on the loose head side and the All Blacks got a dominant push. And I think it was Bauer who was penalised for standing up. And, you know, when you actually saw the replay from that side, he was actually the first player that initiated actually going up. Crazy. he was dead right at the times. Listen, I think the game's it's happened now. The All Blacks scored four tries to two. Mate, is it a team that's turned it around? I'd still say no at this stage, because the South Africans did make some changes, and probably, you know, at the end of the day, well, that's their doing, nobody else. But man, credit to the All Blacks, should be given a lot of credit, Paul, because going into this game, I don't think the South African media, the South African fans, I don't think even All Black fans, even probably just the most ardent ones, who basically love the All Blacks, categorically were basically giving them a chance. And you're playing at a real fortress. That's a fortress. Alice Park, on saying that, I heard a stat today that was the third win in a row that the All Blacks have had at Alice Park. And, you know, you've also got to take into account they're playing at altitude, you know, probably on Foster's, since he's been the All Black coach, that's probably one of his best ever wins, Paul, you would have to say, on paper. Was it as dominant as the final scoreline suggests? Probably, in my eyes, not really, because South Africa made a lot of opportunities themselves, and I think it actually made for a really good game of footy. I mean, I say, if you got your money's worth, if you went along, you'd be happy. Well, of course, unless you're a South African supporter, you know, you obviously wanted to see a bit of history. First time the Springboks have beaten the All Blacks two in a row since a long time ago.
Let me just go through some numbers since you've been talking about this. So it's the first time the All Blacks have ever claimed a win as underdogs. So there we go. So that's it's very rare, obviously, at the TAB that the All Blacks are underdogs. But so there we go. There are four other occasions have all been against the Springboks too, and they've lost them when they've been underdogs against the Springboks. The 12-point margin is the highest All Blacks win over the Springboks at Ellis Park. So, yeah, as you say, that thing about being a fortress for them is there. One that Boa picked up also in our live chat, but 95% winning percentage when Bowden Barrett starts on the bench. There's that one as well. I thought it was interesting that Richard Mwanga went past 300 points. So he now has 302 points as an All Black. Five players are ahead of him. Aaron Cruden on 322, and a massive jump to Grant Fox on 645. Bowden Barrett, 708. Mertens, 967. And Carter, 1,598. So I can't see him catching Dan Carter up, but Aaron Cruden definitely well within his sights for that one. LB said Ellis Park hasn't been a fortress against the All Blacks since I can remember. As Stephen said, look, they've won three on the bounce there now. I guess that's true.
But it is in terms of other. I don't know if there's any other teams that are probably as successful as the All Blacks there. The other thing I was just going to mention, you know, that was a new front row, you know, in terms of experience, a pretty inexperienced All Black front row that was fronting up. And I did mention, none of the New Zealand press has actually picked this up, but there's still probably about five or six guys, you know, if you think of Brody Retallick, you think of Joe Moody, you think of Ethan Blackhour, you think of Jack Goodhue, you think of Anton Lennett-Brown, Ofa Tuangafasi. There's probably about six guys who aren't available for this All Black team, but I just have a funny feeling that for some of these guys, especially the likes of maybe Ofa Tuangafasi and even the likes of Brody Retallick, I think they may have actually opened the door to others, because I actually quite like how that locking combination of Barrett and Whitelock works, Paul.
Yeah, look, Barrett's been playing very well as well. LB says, I mean, we had an experienced front row as well. Experienced obviously in the hooker, yes, but not sure the props. Whereas, you say it was across the board for the All Blacks there. And obviously a much more experienced front row to come off the bench for the Springboks. And the strength of that bench has been a big thing for the Noctua Rites. Madness dropping to Groot against Ireland shown up here. Yeah, look, I think one of the things we've seen with perhaps some of them, I think there is, and we'll get onto this in a second, actually, because I think the around Foster and what's been going on, I think drawing the Ireland one in that first test, that he was basically selecting players that he trusted because he didn't feel safe in his position. This one was kind of like, well, look, I've got to roll the dice anyway, because if I lose this one, I'm out. And he did roll the dice. Now, should he have rolled the dice earlier in the season with some of these bigger props? Yes, put bluntly. And it shows selection perhaps in that propping department, in particular in the front row, hasn't been quite right on that one. The review, how is Cullen Grayson not in the squad? Yeah, of course, where does he fit in this one? Box going to change 6-2 split now until we have a full squad back. Can't risk it like this again. Lucania Am showed himself to be the world class player that he absolutely is by playing on the wing, and basically the Springboks didn't miss out. He was as good as an international winger, even though he was playing out of position in this game. John in our live chat, they are Am's underrated. What do you mean he's underrated? He's the best 13 in the world. I mean, he's a fantastic player.
The thing is, we've never seen it because the game plan that they play with is so limited, and we actually never get to see these brilliant outside backs that they have, and it's only really when they're actually forced to play a particular game plan do we actually see these guys with opportunities. And boy, their footwork is absolutely staggering. Lucania Am, boy, that's about as good a performance you'd see in a losing side anywhere. And in my Pimpy on the other side of the wing, you know, even better. Although I would think if Caleb Clark could probably play his time over again, he'd probably want to make a better fist of that tackle, really and really and truthfully. Technically, he did most things right, just did not hang on to the guy hard enough. So it was probably a tackle that should have made, but credit to Am for finishing that opportunity off.
Yeah, I think the 23-35 blew the scoreline out a bit. I think 23-28 was perhaps more reflective of the game. Look, the South Africans came back into this and were leading, don't forget, with an hour to go, 20-21. So they did get back into the lead. Arguably, if Beauden Barrett hadn't picked up that yellow and hadn't tackled the player off the ball, who knows what would have happened. Maybe that was taking one for the team, and that did save the game in some ways, maybe. But there we go. The All Blacks managed to play well with 14 men to get that try in 73 minutes. So that's the one other thing, tactical thing I wanted to pick out that I thought was really interesting was when Beauden Barrett went off, what did the All Blacks do? They brought on Quintipire for Sam Kane and went, look, we are not going to play for 10 minutes with a player missing in the backfield, with the back. So they deliberately brought him on. And then as soon as the 10 minutes were up, Tupu Vaai came on and to take the pack back up to 8 players. Whilst I was talking earlier about how innovative use by the Springboks with their bench and how they did it, I thought the All Blacks also showed towards the end of the game their innovative use of the bench to make sure that whilst they had that yellow card, the man down was in an area of the pitch that they wanted, not where the player who was infringing was from necessarily. Interesting. So interesting use of the bench there by the All Blacks. Let's flip over to the other game before we talk about the fallout from this one. Argentina versus Australia. Look, Australia won last weekend. Argentina came back in this one. Australia with 16 in first choice injuries. They're decimated as a team. So I mean, not surprising here that Argentina got up. Was this really a 47? Does 48-17 really show the dominance or reflect the scoreline? Personally, I don't think it did. Look, at 36-17, you had the Wallabies playing out of their own 22 and pushing the game, which saw the scoreline blow out with two late tries. So I think with that at 36-17, being within two scores, the Wallabies were still in that one kind of thing, in it with a great 50-22 that they screwed up after that. So to me, I think that two score lead is probably more reflective of this rather than the 31 point lead that we ended up with. I guess that's my summary of that game because we're running soon.
Yeah. No, you're pretty much right. Listen, the Argentinians got out of the block for a moment there. It looked like a game where if tackling was an option, and unfortunately one team tightened up their defense and the other just kept on scoring tries. You know, whilst Australia have got all these injuries, gee, I look through this team and it still wasn't a bad sort of side that they put on the paddock, but I suppose just messing with some various combinations. But I think at the end of the day, I think they'd be pretty gutted to have conceded that many points. Probably one of the most disappointing performances during Dave Rennie's reign as a head coach. Paul, I know they took a bit of a battering and probably early in the piece when he was the coach against the All Blacks, but to be fair back there, he put a pretty young side, young and experienced side on the paddock. So and once again, they obviously missed their inspirational captain Hooper as well. So a big loss for the Wallabies. Hopefully he's okay though.
Yeah, if he's okay. And obviously, yeah, missing him, obviously also missing Karevi at 12, arguably the best 12 in the world at the moment, even if he hasn't played much on that one. So yeah, to be honest, in our live chat, there was question mark as to should Rennie be getting the same sort of flack as Foster at the moment? And I guess I point out two things. One, there's the injury piece, and they don't have the same depth as New Zealand have. And then also is this, which is shows you, look, I mean, these are the world rankings of the two teams of Australia and the All Blacks. Australia, never been number one. And he took them over in sort of 2019. So around this sort of point mark where they'd just dropped or Czech had taken them from third down to sort of seventh, sixth in the world. And he has shown, well, pretty flat to slightly up, getting up to third at one point, currently around about fifth. So look, he has improved. So the expectation is much more is around sort of put a kind of sub point. You look at the All Blacks where they've historically been number one, occasionally dropped to number two. Now Foster was part of the setup that saw them drop down sort of like two, maybe three-ish after. So he took them over. I took over them at this level of 2-3. And what's happened then? Well, now they're down in fifth. So whilst Rennie has slightly taken them up on the positive side to level, what we've seen with Foster is he's taken the team and has definitely taken them lower down. So the expectations are different. And also kind of where they are relative to where they have been is also in there. The reviewer says likely would have been number one somewhere around 1999 to 2000. But I think that was before the rankings actually existed. So yes, on that one. So to me, that's why Rennie, look, he is taking some flak in the New Zealand press, having lost the series to England. Obviously, this what 31 point defeat, you're going to take some flack from that, but to me, I think there's a clear difference as to why Foster is taking how much flack he is at the moment. Then so after the game, so we'll just run through some of the key things that have happened since then. Foster was asked, are you going to be head coach going into Argentina? And he said, I don't know. which was brutally honest and was, wow, okay, that's an interesting one. Not the kind of response you'd expect, which I think would be, look, it's not in my hands, but I think I deserve to be I deserve to have the role, or I think I can do a good job. So interesting to say that. Then we had Ari Surveyor saying that that Foster was his coach and his head coach, so basically coming out in support of his coach. Now, they asked him, do you think he should be head coach into Argentina? He said, look, he is my head coach. So clearly, whilst he wouldn't say it in so many words, he's saying, look, I am putting my backing to him. Sam Cain came out the next day and went one a little bit further, saying, look, we expect him to be head coach next year. Oh, sorry, not next year, into Argentina. And then we had the CEO of New Zealand Rugby, who after the Ireland series went into, well, basically put out a statement, went into radio silence for a week and didn't talk to anybody, decided that that wasn't the right approach and decided that, look, he had to talk after this one. Now, I think there was an interesting one. So Dylan Cleaver puts out a newsletter called The Bounce. I thought I enjoyed what he put, I'm trying to find the actual quote from his newsletter. But basically, the quote from the newsletter was, right, well, this news conference was booked because obviously he had to say something, because after last time he didn't say anything and took lots of flack, and so it had to be transparent. But clearly, he hadn't expected the All Blacks to win, so he had nothing to say. Had this look and going, we didn't expect this scenario, so I don't know what to say. It's like, boy, oh boy, there is, as Simon says, Mark Robertson is seriously out of his depth, doesn't know how to handle public relations, clearly, and talk in the media, doesn't understand the concept of what transparency really means. They've been a bit more transparent in saying, well, the process is that we'll talk about it and we'll give you a response on Wednesday or Thursday. Boy, oh boy, that is appalling. If you want to say that, you can't say we're going to do a review. These people will do the review. It'll happen over these days, and you'll hear from us on Thursday. And you make it clear and precise as to what's going to actually happen and what people can expect from it. And then you deliver on that rather than going, some people will talk about it because, well, apparently that's me being transparent and letting you know we'll talk about it. No, it's not. And we'll give a response on Wednesday or Thursday. Okay, so we don't know when you're going to respond to us. We don't know what you're going to talk about. And we don't know what the outcome's going to be. What a pull on.
Paul, I was going to say, hypothetically, had the All Blacks lost that game, do you suspect... excuse me, do you suspect Robinson would have made a decisive announcement at the end of that game?
Well, he wasn't making it at the end of the game, was he? He was making that decisive announcement as the team were getting onto an aeroplane. Right? Which, again, I don't know if they were getting on the aeroplane or whether they're actually on the aeroplane already. So, again, how do you... you've got to tell them first and give them an opportunity to tell their family, right? Because let's be honest, their family, whilst the actual players in this, or when I mean by players, I mean in this scenario, I mean Robertson is one of the, sorry, not Robert, Robertson is one of the players, obviously, coaches, administrators, players, you let them know they can deal with stuff because they get media training. Their families don't. So they need to be given opportunity to let their families know, because this is big part of this. So look, they should have, if he was going to do it, making an actual announcement, it was the wrong place and the wrong time to be doing it. It was scheduled wrong. He didn't know what he was going to say. And it was just such an amateur response to what you think should be here. LB said the fans are the biggest shareholders in the team. And then if you follow up with saying shareholders is the wrong word, you're quite right. Because unfortunately, whilst the public think that they own the All Blacks, they don't. The All Blacks are owned by New Zealand Rugby, which is I don't know if it's a company or a non-profit or whatever, but the public don't own it. It's owned by New Zealand Rugby. and it's and that's part of the problem is that they've New Zealand Rugby have marketed it as it's owned by the people because they want to get people to buy jerseys, but when it comes to decision making, they don't want to let the public know.
what is rather alarming is when you hear now there's only a handful of journalists that are over in South Africa at the minute with the All Blacks, or obviously on route home at the moment, but those journalists have been pretty much shut out. And listen, I know listening to Mark Hinton on radio, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, he actually had learnt through some of the senior players who had basically approached Mark Robinson to offer support for the besieged coach. They were pretty much told to stay in their own lane from Robinson, which is just really quite incredible at the end of the day for a CEO. So that's going to make contracting negotiations with New Zealand Rugby quite interesting moving forward over the next couple of years or so. But it really does show you how maybe the disconnect between board, CEO, and of course the coaching group. But you know, in recent days, what we actually have seen, Paul, is solidarity between the players and the coach, to the point where I'm almost thinking to myself, you know, I don't know whether you'd call this player power or you'd call it player support for the coach, but now they've almost basically putting the pressure back on Mark Robinson, and even to the point where I think the last press conference the skipper Sam Kane had before he left South Africa was saying, hey, listen, my phone is on if Mark Robinson needs to give me a call. So what does that tell you? So I have a funny feeling there could be another twist again.
That's fantastic. I hadn't heard this one about stay in your lane, which is fantastic. I mean, if you turn around to someone like Ardie Surveyor and go, stay in your lane, here's a guy who has basically gone, I don't like talking to the media, so I'll have my own media outlet via my social media. I don't like what the Hurricanes, what the All Blacks media people say about me, so I'm going to say it through my own channel to my through social media. I'm going to tell them when I have an injury, I'll announce what my injury and how long I'm out for via my channels, because I don't trust the media outlets I don't trust the media managers for New Zealand Rugby. Yeah. Provide me, whether that's All Blacks or Hurricanes, or what they tell me to say. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to do it my own way. And then I'm going to not get a player agent. I'm going to negotiate my own contract, which is what Ardie Surveyor did. Now he got a player agent to help him at the final stages there to cross T's and dot I's. But as far as what the actual numbers were going to be, he negotiated those numbers because he wanted to have control and understanding of what it was. You don't tell players or somebody like Ardie Surveyor to stay in his lane, because he'll flip the finger at you and walk out of that lane he won't walk out of his lane, because he'll tell you, these are all my lanes and I'm going to walk in them and I'm going to handle my image. How I'm seen by the public myself, because I don't trust you to do it, because you have been mismanaging me for so long. So again, as you say, it just shows how out of touch he is with reality as to how the media space works, to tell people to stay in their lane, because it ain't going to work when you've got players like Ardie Surveyor in there. Other players like Sam Kane, etc., are less open and through social media, so I don't know how they think and how they react to that kind of thing. But you can tell that Ardie Surveyor would take that extremely poorly to be told to stay in his lane. Now you're muted again, Steve.
For example, if later in the week there's an announcement that comes out that they are changing the coach, the fallout could be very, very interesting. So that's going to be one long flight home for the CE Mark Robinson. He's going to have plenty to think about on his plate. I mean, to say somebody, a friend of mine actually said something interesting to me today. He said, listen, you know, the very good coaches, players will play for a coach that they respect. Listen, the only problem I've got with this, you know, these are the same players. If you kind of look at their record in the last calendar year, it's a little bit alarming. If you're looking at stats alone, but boy, Paul, what an interesting week it's going to be. We're going to have plenty to talk about next week, aren't we?
We are. But let me just cover. So Nocturne says the players had a chance to tell New Zealand Rugby about fostering a review. They did, right? And at the end of November, at the end of December, or at the end of November, after November 20, December last year, at the end of last year, they did tell New Zealand Rugby what they thought about fostering a review. And they said, we want to keep Foster, right? And this was the Crusaders players and the non-Crusaders players in that All Black squad, from what I'm hearing. Now, I'm not going to name my sources where I've heard that from, but I have heard it that the Crusaders were the Crusaders players want to have him as head coach. What they also said at the time was, we do not want John Plumtree and Brad Moore as assistant coaches. We want them gone. Right? And that's what they said in December. But they didn't do it. they went after Ireland. Why? Well, because by then they had to do something. But the players had already said they did not want those assistant coaches, but they did want Foster to stay. So Nocturnal writes, they have said that. They've gone through the proper channels. They've been told, so they've done that already. They haven't always been heard, listened to. And so hence, they're going to go public to make sure that their views are known. And their position is known when decisions are made, and we don't have the New Zealand Rugby media coming out because, oh, he's lost the dressing room, therefore we're getting rid of him. So you can't say that now, folks. I mean, we've seen that going around on Twitter quite a lot that last week, that Foster had lost the dressing room. And let's be blunt here, folks, it's pretty clear he has not. And I was surprised at people saying that, because I just couldn't see that. I've not seen that he's lost the dressing room. Has he not coached the players properly and not putting good game plans? That I'd agree with. But there you go. LB, Plumtree is quality. Don't know why the hate. Look, I don't know why the person what the situation was there. Technically, from what I understand, he's a decent coach. Obviously, clearly did good jobs over in South Africa and with Hurricanes. But clearly it wasn't working in this situation. But there you go. Nocturne writes, you can't have the current players picking the coaches. They have vested interest in keeping that coach. Effectively, the players are trying to do this. Fine. But I think apart from a small number of positions around front row and number six, potentially 12, that selection hasn't been Ian Foster's problem, right? I don't think people are saying that he's got 20 players wrong in his squad. Selection is there or thereabouts. Slight tweaking, yes, but the majority of selection is correct. It's game plan is the issue, not selection. So if these players want this guy, then look, they're the right players. We already know that. Unless Steve, you're going to tell me that I'm wrong there and that he's got a whole bunch of players wrong.
I think there's some players who may have actually played their way out, might be playing their way out of this particular squad this season, and it's probably maybe been proven there's a couple that just weren't there. Maybe a selection, Carl Tunukuyafi's a selection that was contested at the top of the year, and that's simply because there was a thought process that here's an opportunity missed to actually bring in a younger player, bring in an Ethan de Groot. But, you know, the excuse that came back was he'd let his fitness go. But, you know, really in the modern day game of rugby, especially with props, you really only need 25, 30 minutes out of your props these days. If Foster is to stay on, I would hope that they would actually surround him with some guys that are going to actually add value to this team, and we're already seeing that at the moment with the forwards coach that's come on
board, Jason Ryan.
Jason Ryan. We've already seen his fingerprints over the performance of the All Black forwards in the last two games. I still think the attack needs a lot more work, Paul, because to me at the moment it's still very, very side to side, I still think we probably negated the rush defence to an extent in this last test, but there's still a lot more work to be done. And I think he's just got to get some minds with a little bit more clarity. I'd actually still like to see them a little bit more open-minded about selection in terms of looking for players with the actual skill sets that suit a game plan. You know, I think sometimes we always look at the players with a little bit of bling who've got X factor, as opposed to a player. I'll give you an example. Somebody like Conrad Smith wasn't the flashiest player, but did most things right. And we've had players like that before in the midfield. Warwick Taylor is another player from the 80s who basically had a really good skill set, does things mostly right. I look at somebody like Jack Goodhue, who's got a skill set like that. There's always a place in a team for that particular player. Everybody who you know is dependable and is going to do everything at the right time, but also helps your inside backs out, your first five, your Moangas, your Bowden Barretts. I think these are wonderfully skillful players, but they're only as good as the guys that play beside them.
Yeah, and a final thing I'm just going to pull out is around employment law. And I saw now, look, we don't know what Fozzie's contract looks like, but looking at New Zealand, looking at generally New Zealand rugby employment law, and again, this is from someone getting in touch with me talking about this, having talked to an employment lawyer, is that, look, Fozzie could definitely argue constructive dismissal if he does go, right? Having been told, oh yeah, look, he's got a contract through to the end of next year, but he's only the right guy for the next two games, right? So that to me is and then if he's been put on a performance improvement plan, well, look, he's got to win out of these two. You can't expect the performance improvement plan to say you have to have two wins. So he's met whatever he's met probably whatever the performance improvement plan was. Therefore, if they're going to get rid of him, it's going to be a major payout. Because that's what he is not going to walk, and I don't blame him. Put bluntly, he hasn't. They gave him the contract through to the end of the Rugby World Cup. It's his dream job. It's what he wants to do. So why should he walk? To put bluntly. So to my mind, yeah, it's New Zealand Rugby have managed this incredibly badly over the past month, whatever it is, at the very least, and for longer than that. If he does get terminated, it'll be a big payout. I'll tell you what, just give Foster the money, no one will begrudge it. Oh yes, they will. People will begrudge whatever payout he gets. They'll go, oh, he shouldn't take anything. It's for the good of the game. Remember, this is national pride. Rubbish. It's a professional game. He's got a professional contract, and therefore he will take flak anyway. And look, one of the points we'll make here is that all of our criticism around players, coaches, etc., is always is not personal criticism. It's work criticism. It's business, right? We don't go. We've said several times that our understanding is that Foster is a good guy. He's a nice guy. He might not come over that way in media conferences. He comes over as gruff. But we've said that several times. That it's we aren't questioning people's characters. We're questioning their ability to do their jobs, which is a different thing to questioning someone's their technical ability, not their character. It's business. So, Stephen, last thing, when we get our announcement, either Wednesday, Thursday, or whoever knows when New Zealand Rugby say it, do you think that Foster will take the team into the Argentina games or not? Yes or no?
Paul, if you ask me this... if you ask me this about 2:59 on Sunday morning, I would have said he's gone for all money. But I'm really not so sure now. My head tells me that he's actually going to be moved on, but part of me's now a little bit mixed up, especially since the players have come out and supported him categorically. Either way, this is not going to end well for New Zealand Rugby, Paul. But for me, I think he goes.
You think he's gone? I'll agree with you that I thought at the end of the game, when he said, I don't know if I've got the job, I'm like, he's gone. Having heard the players come out and talk now, he's in. There's no way. Rugby cannot get rid of him. If they do, it'll be disaster. So there you go. So I'm saying, yes, he will be leading the All Blacks into the Argentina tests. You're saying no. And I think that probably sets us up, probably gives you, everyone who's listening and watching, a good idea as to where this situation is and how badly New Zealand rugby have managed it. Because we shouldn't be in this situation 2 weeks out from a test match. So yeah, well, there we go.
Paul Watson makes it even more crazy. I've heard rumours of coaching staff already being put in place, prospective guys. I've heard everything from Scott Robinson and Leon McDonald would be joining Scott Robinson along with Jason Ryan. So that's some of the rumours that I've heard around the fringes. So, gee whiz, what a mess. And my time watching the All Blacks, I think you'd probably have to go back to the David Rutherford John McCaw fiasco with the hosting rights back in 2003 when New Zealand Rugby absolutely blew an opportunity to co-host the Rugby World Cup in 2003, and I think you'd have to go back to as a real black day for New Zealand rugby. I didn't think in my lifetime I'd see an even blacker one, but I have to say, in terms of the way this is being handled, no words, Paul, no words.
Put bluntly, the person who needs to go is the CEO. At the end of the day, he's the one that's come out of this worse than anybody. So there we go, folks. Do join us again next Monday at 8 p.m. where we'll be able to talk about, was I right or was Stephen right around what's happened to Foster? Well, we hope we know by then, because the All Blacks should be back in camp. But who knows with New Zealand rugby, eh? But he seems right there. Yeah, I've seen rumours again of an entire coaching setup that's apparently in place to go. LB says, thank you for your SARU. They're the worst. Well, they've had their moments. The individual provinces have been even worse, though. Let's be honest, Eastern Province with the Kings has been a right mess. But anyway, let's not head down that rabbit hole. So thank you, everyone. Do join us next Monday at 8 p.m. Enjoy the rugby this weekend. As I say, I'm going to be at a couple of games this weekend, Farrow Palmer Cup and NPC. Stephen's going to be probably heading along to an NPC game as well. So hope we'll have some interviews for you next week on the show. Have a great week all. Stay safe.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.